The following is a presentation of the Dirt Track Channel.
Well, hi there, everybody. I'm Sean Wood, and welcome to the Sprint Car Show for Tuesday, November the 4th. On today's broadcast, we'll talk with National Sprint Car Hall of Famer Jimmy Oskey. Brad Doty will stop by and talk with us about the 2014 World of Outlaws season, and we'll talk with third-generation driver Cy Lynch. That's all coming up next here on the Sprint Car Show, brought to you by the National Sprint Car Hall of Fame and Museum, located outside of Turn 2 at the famed Knoxville Raceway, and by Coastal181.com, reading for racers. Now that fall has arrived, it's time to start working on that Christmas list for the race fan in your life. Whether you are looking for a book or a DVD, you can do all of your shopping securely online at Coastal181.com. Whether it's dirt or asphalt, short track or super speedway, open wheel or stock car, you'll find something for every race fan at Coastal181.com. Coastal181.com, reading for racers.
Hi, this is Nicole Bauer. You're listening to the Sprint Car Show with Sean Wood.
Welcome back to the Sprint Car Show here on the DirtTrackChannel.com. Well, there are two big sprint car races taking place this weekend on both coasts. On the East Coast, you have the World Finals for the World of Outlaws Sprint Cars. And now on the West Coast, at the Paris Auto Speedway, you have the 19th annual Oval Nationals for the non-wing sprint cars taking place this weekend. Joining us right now to talk a little bit about that because of a very significant restoration of his beautiful JFK Company number one machine is 2000 National Sprint Car Hall of Fame inductee Jimmy Oskey, now living in Downey, California. Jimmy, it is an honor and a great pleasure to talk with you. Welcome to the Sprint Car Show.
Well, glad to be here.
I was reading over your Hall of Fame plaque, and I see your dad was a car owner in the early days with the Jalopies out on the West Coast. What is your earliest recollection of being around the racing scene and the Jalopy scene back in the day?
Oh, well, I think I was probably 10 or 11 and going to the Jalopy races there in Gardena Stadium. I wasn't too far from Ascot then. Yeah, about the time Ascot was being built, I guess. And then we went from Jalopies to, up to the modifieds that ran in San Diego. My dad had some pretty good drivers. Hogel drove for him. And then gradually we moved into, he started sponsoring sprint cars and stuff. And then I started hanging around with sprint cars. And then just kind of worked my way into driving those. I was driving the modified, and then I kept it at a place where they had some sprint cars in a shop, and I got to know those guys, and so finally they gave me a couple chances at sprint cars and just kind of went from there.
And obviously you had a great career for yourself in the sprint cars, a five-time California Racing Association champion. I want to stay with your dad for just a second. Did he ever talk to you when you were a kid or even when you were older as to what got him involved in auto racing and involved as a car owner?
He always liked exciting things, football and racing. And I'd think about baseball. He'd say that was too slow. So he liked faster moving things and exciting things. So somehow we got stuck on racing, and I liked it. I was pretty excited when you're 12, 13, and then see all those guys running. And so, I just look forward every weekend to going to the Jalopy race.
And speaking of baseball, in your National Sprint Car Hall of Fame information on the webpage, you were big into baseball. Matter of fact, it said it came very naturally to you. So how did you end up not going and pursuing the opportunity maybe one day to play professional baseball and end up being a tremendous sprint car driver?
Well, it was just one of those things my dad always took me to the races, and he didn't give me much influence on baseball. And I just got acclimated to racing, and I guess you have to go one direction or the other. So I just went in the direction of racing, and I always took baseball and my glove to the track with me in my helmet bag, and I'd give all my friends the baseball signals from across the way, and a lot of times they'd just look at me and wouldn't know what I was talking about, but it made me feel good.
Do you still follow the game today?
Yeah, baseball. I like the strategy and probably I have a good sense of humor. So those guys are always doing a lot of humorous things on their downtime. So maybe that would attract me to it also.
That's interesting. Anything that you can take from the baseball and the strategy of the game and apply it to auto racing at all?
Oh, not too much. I think racing just has an element of its own. I learned a lot from racing that I use now in everyday living, like patience and self-discipline and appreciation and respect. I think I gained a lot, not only in terms of being successful in racing, but being successful in life through what I learned in racing.
And, of course, this weekend, as we mentioned, the 19th annual Oval Nationals at the Paris Auto Speedway, your famed JFK company, number one, owned by Jack Kindle and his brother, will be on display, but also understand you might be taking it out for a few hot laps after it was beautifully restored by one of the greats in Indiana in non-wing sprint car racing, John Stambrough. Tell me a little bit about what was your reaction when you heard this car was being restored, and what is it going to be like when you actually have the chance to get back in, fire her up, and get back to doing some racing at the Speedway this weekend?
Well, I was honored that Stambrough did that. We'd always talk and stuff at the races, and then when he came out here for the Nationals, through the years, we'd hang around and go eat or something and go to a museum, and so I guess he just kind of he likes that era of history, and we'd always talk about it, and then one day he said, he's just going to build this car, and so I got kind of excited. I thought, bring back old memories, and so yeah, I'm looking forward to it this weekend, seeing everybody's reactions when they see that car, and I'm thinking probably a lot of people will think that must be the original car because the pictures he sent me looks almost exactly like the car I drove. So he got it down and just almost perfect.
And what was it about Jack Kindle, that car, and you that was such an integral part of not only the history of CRA, but made you guys so successful as well?
Well, we both were kind of easygoing. He never got excited much. And he said, just do the best you can. So, and we had our thought processes were almost on the same level. And then I think maybe 6 months after I was driving for him, then I found out that we both were born on the same day. We had the same birth date, different years, but the same day we were born. So that was interesting. But it just, we never... When we did good, we didn't get too excited. If we didn't do good, we just figured, there's always another race, and we had a lot of consistency there.
And, of course, you had the opportunity to race at one of the great tracks of all time in Ascot. With it being so close to the ocean, what were some of the challenges in being able to master that track that were thrown at the drivers each and every weekend?
Well, it was... a lot of times, it looked the same all the time, but it was always different when we raced on it, and I'd always talk to the guys that took care of the track, the maintenance guys, and how they prepared it that week, and they'd tell me, sometimes it's cloudy and the water soaks in different than if when it's sunny, so it might be a different type of track, and then sometimes the fog came in from the ocean, and you could see the wetness on the spare tires that were laying around where the dew was coming in, so it would be different then. So I just try to set my car up basically and try to adapt to what the track was doing. But it was, you really had to back it in hard at Ascot to make it around the turn and go down the back straightaway. So it was an interesting track, and all the tracks I raced at all through the Midwest and when I was back there, nothing really compared to Ascot. So I had to try to adapt to all those other different types of tracks back there. The Ascot was just all by itself as far as how you drove it.
So because of those factors that you just mentioned, would you say then Ascot was the most challenging track to a driver in terms of trying to figure out and read what the track was going to do from the time you unload it through the heats, through to the feature in terms of the overall nightly setup? Was that the most challenging track that you were ever racing on?
Well, I think it was a pretty challenging track. That seemed like once I ran year after year, I got pretty used to it. But I could see when guys had come from back east and run, they'd try to drive kind of straight in like you do back east on those tracks. And I knew that from when I was running back east, I had to adapt to those tracks driving straight in. So I could see the trouble they'd have a lot of times when they wouldn't drive it in. You'd have to drive it in real sideways instead of straight. So I think that's where they had problems. But there's some guys that adapted to it really good. McSpadden and Schumann, they got real fast at Ascot. So, it was like a different world running at Ascot.
Speaking of a different world, obviously the Midwest tracks and the East Coast tracks are vastly different than out in California. You ran a little bit with USAC for a couple of years. What was it like back in those days coming to the Midwest and running with USAC, and then even coming here to Pennsylvania and running tracks in and around the Keystone State?
Well, I mean, they were out here. I pretty much had it my own way back there, though. I mean, that's everybody's fast back there. I remember when I first went to USAC, there was like 30 cars at the race, and we were used to getting 60, 70 cars out here. And I thought, well, 30 cars aren't bad. Maybe I'll do pretty good. But I watched qualifying, and every one of them was fast. I mean, it was like there was no slow ones. So everywhere we went, it was challenging for the track. Because running those different tracks all the time, by the time I adapted to one track, we moved to another track. So, I think it's more, they race more back there, sometimes four or five nights a week. So we're out here, we just run once or twice a week. So and running all those different tracks back there and all that time they're putting in, they've got to get good. So that's what I noticed, the big thing, that they were pretty fast back there. Like out here was in a small pond. Back there was like the ocean with all the sharks. So,
Well, they do have that saying here in central Pennsylvania, this is where the outlaws come to learn how to race. So a little different with the wing on then. But and speaking of wing, if I read correctly, you were the last driver to win a CRA championship in the non-roll cage era. Is that correct?
Yeah. My own car that I had that Hank Henry built. I won the last race in 1969 at Ascot, and then the next year in '70 they had roll cages. So, and the car won the championship that year. So yeah, it's the last car to win the championship and the race non-cage.
And how much do you think the cage played into the evolution of the safety of the sport?
Well, I think it was it was big. I was always four cages. Anything that made it safer, I was for. And I was happy when the cages came. I mean, I look back now, cars without cages, and I shake my head how we ever drove without cages.
Yeah, that had to be some very interesting times. Well, Jimmy, I'm wondering, as we get closer to this weekend's Oval Nationals out there at the Paris Auto Speedway, and you get to see the restored car and you get to sit in it, emotions coming your way, waves of not only the emotions but the races. I mean, have you been thinking about all that you've accomplished and what's it going to be like to get behind the wheel of a car for the first time in a good number of years?
Well, I've been running the car that Dean used to drive. They restored it, so I run it sometimes at Paris.
Okay.
So, but this will be the first time I've ever got back in a car that was real familiar that I had a lot of success in. So I'm sure I have some emotions, but I'm not sure what they'll be. I know I'm kind of excited to go out and take a few laps and maybe pace the field or something. And, I think it'll be a, great time. Plus, Stavro said he's going to bring food out too, so that'll be good.
That's always good when people bring food. And Jimmy, I would appreciate your time. I know you're a bit on the busy side, so I just have one final question for you. And I know this every racer that has ever raced and went on and retired has been asked this. It's actually a two-part question. One, is there one race for you that will always stand out as either your favorite or one of your most memorable events? And number two, you're still around the sport. Why do you think some drivers have a tough time when they walk away not being able to come back to the track? And why do you think drivers like yourself are still being able to be involved in one shape or form, even some 20-plus years after you last turned the wheel?
Well, one of the most memorable races I always think about is El Centro. It was a rough track. We ran there to start the year off. Every year we'd go down there in February or March, and it was like a horse track, half-mile track. And when I was a little kid, I used to go there, and the track conditions were so bad, they only ran 20-lap features. And so I thought, wow, that's you have to be tough to run that. It's, you know, holes and ruts and only 20-lap feature. And I thought, someday I'd like to, run that race. And then I won the Saturday race in 1969 and started back around 10th or something, and that was very exciting, because as a little kid I looked at that track and the challenges it posed, and then to know that I won a feature there was I always reflect back on that race. It was one of the early races that I won. But and as for still going to the races, I think I'm not sure what it is that a lot of guys still, they want to race, but they're at the age where they can't race anymore, so they don't even want to go look at it because they'll get too down. But I look at it as it was something I did for all those years, and I had success, and I learned a lot about myself from it, and it was one phase of my life that was good. And so I leave that phase there and I go to the next phase, and then I want to enjoy that next phase as much as I did the one before that. And I think, when I go to the races today, I've been through all the emotional levels that these guys are going through now. So when I see the races and see what's happening in the race, I can almost experience those emotional levels with them, and a lot of times talk to them after the race about it, and they know that I know what they're feeling, so they can talk to me, and maybe it helps them in one way or another, to be better or safer.
Jimmy, it's been a great pleasure to speak with you. We want to thank you very much for taking time out on your early Tuesday morning in California to join us. All the best of luck to you. Go and enjoy getting back into the car that you're familiar with. And we look forward to talking to you again in the near future here on the Sprint Car Show.
Okay, thank you very much, Sean.
Five-time CRA champion Jimmy Oskey joining us here on the Sprint Car Show. We will take a break and be back with more right after this. Now that fall has arrived, it's time to start working on that Christmas list for the race fan in your life. Whether you are looking for a book or DVD, you can do all of your shopping securely online at Coastal181.com. Whether it's dirt or asphalt, short track or super speedway, open wheel or stock car, you'll find something for every race fan at Coastal181.com. Coastal181.com, reading for racers.
Hi, this is Logan Shuhart. You're listening to the Sprint Car Show with Sean Wood.
Welcome back to the Sprint Car Show here on the DirtTrackChannel.com. Well, this is the week that the World of Outlaws, Sprint Cars, Late Models, and the Super Dirt Car Series wraps up their championships, although two of the three championships have already been decided between the World of Outlaws, Sprint Cars, and the Late Models. Here to talk a little bit about the World Finals, plus a lot of other things happening in the world of Sprint Car Racing, is our good friend Brad Doty. Brad, always a pleasure to talk with you. Welcome back to the show.
Hey, thanks for having me on.
It seems like the season just flies by every year. We talk a couple times during the year. It seems like this year has gone by incredibly fast. What is your overall take on the 2014 World of Outlaws season?
Oh, man, it's been very, very competitive. It's kind of ironic that it's the season with the most first-time winners in history, but yet Donnie Schatz has won 26 races himself, you know, so it seems like every other team has been very inconsistent. Pittman's had a great year, 13 or 14 wins, you know, as you said, the point championship, he finds himself finishing second in the points, but other than those two, and especially, like I said, Schatz, it's been wide open from there on back. I mean, there's been no dominant team or nobody that's been, you know, consistently fast night in and night out except for Schatz. And so a little surprised at how many first-time winners there were this year.
One of the newer teams on the circuit this year is Bobby Allen's team of Jacob Allen and Logan Schuchart. And a lot of people were wondering if they could make it through the entire year, particularly after getting through that brutal California swing in the early goings. What does it say about a team under the tutelage of Bobby not only to be able to make it through the year, but just how difficult is it for a team that may not have the high-end dollars as some of the teams like the Schatz, the Pittmans, the Sweets do?
Yeah, it had to be tough. It had to be very tough. But boy, what an experience for Jacob and Allen and Logan Schuchart to be out on the road and just, I remember, you know, my rookie season, just to get to see the country, just to see things that you normally wouldn't get to see, not to mention race with the, you know, the World of Outlaws for a complete season and make it through. I mean, Bobby Allen has always been known to be do things on a shoestring and a tight budget and make it work, and he somehow got it done this year again.
And speaking of making things work, the magic worked one more time for Steve Kinzer, picking up the win in the third race of the 2014 season. But it seems like last year repeated itself again. The team struggled to find speed. Were you surprised that Steve made the announcement that he wanted to have this one final year? And also, were you surprised that he struggled to the point where he'll finish eighth and no higher than possibly seventh in the final standings here come this weekend?
I'm not really surprised at the quote, you know, farewell tour, or him saying that, because he's never officially retired, and he's left the door wide open to run, you know, basically all World of Outlaws season next year, but maybe a few races, because he said, you know, he's just done chasing points or running an entire year. So what his plans are in August at the Nationals, he couldn't even tell me for sure what, you know, what his plans were for next year. But, you know, so it didn't surprise me to do a tour like this. I mean, it's smart business, from T-shirt sales and just letting the track promoters know and different things, so he could, you know, do all this throughout the year. But I guess I was a little surprised that the struggle he had, especially starting out the year the way he did, you know, really fast. And I even jokingly said, "Boy, he'll probably be rethinking this retirement or semi-retirement thing." If he keeps running like this, and unfortunately the bottom fell out, it seemed like, and they definitely struggled, to, you know, the last half of the year. So he may be glad when the season's over and he can just take a breath and figure out what he's going to do next year.
Yeah, I wonder just how much of that took a toll on him in terms of the different appearances and the people wanting to get autographs, knowing that they're not sure if he's going to show up at their track again or ever again. I saw that firsthand up at Rolling Wheels, which it's a nice track, but that's probably one of the most unsafe pit areas there is around, because it's so compact with those sprint car haulers, and they were just mobbing the guy, and it's almost like he wanted to accommodate the fans, but you could almost see that he was ready for this farewell to the final points championship chase. Was over. Any favorite stories of Steve Kinzer from the past that you might be able to share with us, or anything that you guys ever talked about that you could possibly share in reference to Steve?
Oh, nothing other than the year before my accident, I finished second to Steve in the report about lost championship points. I believe I was second. Well, I only won four races that year, and Steve won 46. And he had a record-breaking season. I know I finished second to him a lot of times. And that's, you know, something that was frustrating, but yet, looking back, you know, pretty rewarding that to say I finished, you know, even second to a guy that had a season like that's pretty remarkable. But just his stamina and his mental strength throughout the years has been unbelievable. And, you know, some of his records, the 560 or 80, whatever wins, not to mention the other couple hundred preliminaries that he has, probably never be topped. Some of us, even me, question the 12 Knoxville Nationals wins that he has. Nobody ever do that again, and shots may make a liar out of a lot of us. So, but there's still a lot of records that he'll have forever, I believe. And he was a great asset for not only sprint car racing, but definitely the World of Outlaws. You know, when they started, it was great to be part of that. From a selfish standpoint, it was great for me to be a part of that for a while.
And how about Sammy during the middle of the summer just up and announcing that was it? Did that take you by surprise at all?
Yeah, a little bit. You could tell Sammy wasn't having much fun there toward the middle of the season. He was struggling and things were going on. But you know, a little bit of a surprise the way he did it. And some of us jokingly, I even tweeted it, and a lot of people didn't understand what I meant. But there's one thing that Sammy beat Steve at was retirement. You know, Steve's still out there racing, winding down the year, and Sammy just says, "That's it, I'm done." You know, and of course he's going to run the Chili Bowl. But you know, it was, I saw a great interview with Sammy and Kevin on Dave Despain's show, and they answered a lot of those questions. And Sammy, and it was he really seemed relaxed and really confident in his decision. And just knew it was time. And he even brought up the fact that I think a U-joint broke and slapped him in the foot. Luckily, it didn't break his foot. But he even brought up that he, you know, was concerned about getting hurt, come right out and, you know, sit and said that. And you could just tell, basically, he had enough, and it was time to walk away.
Did you guys ever talk about that back in the days when you were just sitting around, whether it be the campfire or some joint along the highway during the travels? Did you or Sammy or Steve or anybody else back then, even Mark Kinzer, did the subject ever come up as to, we'll know when the time is right to step out of the race car?
No, I personally never spoke to any of them about it or them to me, especially in those early years. I mean, gosh, retirement was so far off, you know, wouldn't even have thought at that time. So to answer your question, I guess no, but you know, I guess it's an internal thing. And my decision was made for me getting hurt, but I know a lot of drivers that have retired, and it was very tough, very emotional and very mentally, you know, they struggled to stay away from it. It's addiction. It's an addiction. I mean, the adrenaline rush from driving a sprint car is pretty high, and you know, there's not much else you can replace it with, and I know guys struggle with that, and it's hard to stay away from it. So you know, some of these guys getting later in years are finding that out.
Is there a reason, Brad, that you think that some drivers struggle with it, but then there are other drivers that don't, and they still enjoy being around the racetrack?
Just personality, I guess. You know, what else you might have going on in your life that kind of fulfills that need a little bit, or, you know, if you can fill it up, not necessarily with the adrenaline rush, but just stay busy, or, you know, maybe stay within the sport. I really genuinely think that Raymer's having as good a time as a car owner right now. Now, that could change, because, you know, when you start struggling and you're spending money, or, you know, you start crashing race cars or blowing engines and it gets expensive, I'm sure the fun's going to go away. But right now, it sure seems like Fred Raymer is very, very happy with retirement and enjoying seeing his boys and Stevie Smith out on the racetrack.
Yeah, they had a pretty good year between he and Stevie, knocking off a couple of outlaw wins, and of course Freddie finishing in the top 10 in points. I'm thinking, and I haven't seen it officially, but I'm thinking Freddie Jr. won the Rookie of the Year, and even at Lincoln Speedway, and even his brother Brandon had some very good results as well. So the landscape is changing, and then that brings me to my next question. On a TV show the other day, Danny Lasoski said that, you know, a number of years ago, if you had asked him, you know, the toughest weekly racing was in Central Pennsylvania, but he felt this year Knoxville had the toughest weekly racing of the 410s throughout the country. We see the Renegade Series, now this new national sprint series is popping up. You have the resurgence, or I should say the alleged resurgence, of the United Racing Club, and you have the United Racing Company with the 360s. Do we have enough sprint cars to go around, or what? And what is your take on all these different little factions popping up all of a sudden?
Well, I just finished my column for Sprint Car and Midget about the split going on here in Ohio between Renegades and All-Stars, and it's never good to have a split, because you split the cars and you split the fans that they compete on the same night. It's never, ever a good situation. But, you know, again, and I even wrote this in one of my columns. I mean, years ago, you had wing or non-wing sprint car racing. You didn't have 410, 360, 358, 305s, limited, you know what I'm saying, crate sprint cars now, even some parts of the country. So when you go to a wing sprint car race, you know, you might have 60 cars there, but realistically, 15 could win the race, you know. Now you go to a 410 sprint car race, and you might have 30 or 40, but there may be 20 or 25 that could win the race. So it has spread it thin a little bit to have so many different divisions. But on the other hand, it does give some, you know, people, you know, young people and new people to the sport a chance to get in and compete too. So that's a plus. But you know, from the 410 side of it, this year has been, I know some of the weekly tracks seem to have struggled, but all the big shows have been, you know, very well. A lot of participants and a lot of teams at a lot of the big races in 410s throughout the entire year. So from what I've seen last year, it's looking pretty darn good.
And speaking of big shows, you have another big show coming up, the 27th annual Brad Doty Classic. It will be Wednesday, July the 15th at Lima Land. That is a week later, and with the rain date of Thursday, July 16th, and then the 17th and 18th is the Kings Royal at Eldora. Anything that you can let fans know about in terms of when tickets might be on sale? Any special added attractions happening for the race this year?
Well, the tickets hopefully will be on sale sometime early. We usually would try to do it around March. We're hoping to do it a little earlier this year, and we're working on some things to make it a little easier for people to get tickets. You mentioned the date. It has been moved back, along with the Kings Royal, moved back 1 week. And a lot of the reason for that is, in Western Ohio, there's a huge, huge country music outdoor festival called Country Concert, and they have literally the top country acts in the world over a 3 or 4 day period, and it's been generally the same weekend as the Kings Royal. So I know a lot of fans drove back and forth. Some, you know, would stay down there and miss either my race or the Kings Royal. So, and then it also put a premium on hotel rooms and that kind of thing. So Eldora has moved theirs back a week, so now the country concert's the weekend before. So hopefully everybody's going to be happy, and it's going to benefit us all. But again, it is July 15th, and folks can go to limaland.com, keep an eye on the website there, and after the first of the year, we'll start letting people know. And you can follow me on Twitter it's at BradDoty18. And I, you know, put out information as often as I can about the event and when tickets will go on sale.
And Brad, do you see this being something that's going to be a permanent move, so that the two entities won't be conflicting with each other, or is that just a one-time move right now?
I'm hoping it's permanent. You know, I mean, I'm sure everybody else is too. So, as of now, you know, that's definitely confirmed for next year. And I don't see why it wouldn't work out from here on out.
Well, Brad, as always, we greatly appreciate your time. Thank you so much for your insights here on the 2014 World of Outlaws season. It will be very interesting next year not to see Sammy or We don't know at what races Steve will be in, and the landscape keeps changing, but one thing's for sure, sprint car racing is still going to be a great spectacle coast to coast, so we'll see what happens when 2015 rolls around. But thanks again, Brad, as always, and we look forward to having you back on the show in the near future.
All right, Sean. Thanks for having me on.
Brad Doty joining us here on the Sprint Car Show. We will take a break and be back with more of our show right after this.
The National Sprint Car Hall of Fame and Museum in Knoxville, Iowa is the only sprint car museum in the world dedicated to promoting the future of sprint car racing and preserving the past. Located in Turn 2 of the world-famous Knoxville Raceway, the National Sprint Car Hall of Fame and Museum is open 7 days a week, year-round, except New Year's Day, Easter, Thanksgiving Day, and Christmas Day. Non-wing sprint cars, historic big cars, open-wheel roadsters, and wing sprinters are all on display in the museum, which also features a movie theater and the National Sprint Car Hall of Fame. Make plans now to stop by the National Sprint Car Hall of Fame and Museum the next time you're in Knoxville, Iowa, or shop our museum store online at www.sprintcarstuff.com. The Hall of Fame and Museum is open from 10 a.m. to 6 p.m. Central Time Monday through Friday, and from noon to 5 p.m. Central Time on Saturdays and Sundays.
Hi, this is Shane Cottle. You're listening to the Sprint Car Show with Sean Wood.
Welcome back to the Sprint Car Show here on the DirtTrackChannel.com. It's our pleasure to welcome this young man to the broadcast right now. He is a third-generation driver. You know his father as the Apollo Rocket from Apollo, Pennsylvania. Of course, we're talking about Ed Lynch Jr. This is his son, Cy, a 17-year-old junior in high school, who is joining us here on the Sprint Car Show. Cy, it's great to talk with you. Welcome to the broadcast.
Thank you. It's great to be here. I'm excited to get it.
Well, obviously, your dad, so well-known, so well-respected, quite an accomplished sprint car driver in his racing careers. What are your earliest recollections of going to the racetrack and seeing that familiar polychromatic 2L scheme race around Western Pennsylvania?
Well, I think my earliest recollection would be the 2002 Silver Cup. I was, probably about 5 or 6 years old at the time, and just sitting in the stands and that whole night, it's remarkable because I just remember the whole thing vividly. And, of course, that was the night that he fought off the Outlaws and was able to win the Silver Cup. And that sticks out the most in my head. However, you know, every time he had a different paint scheme, I was always interested in how the car looked, and you know, because he always had those neon colors, and you could always find them on the track. And every time he changed the paint scheme, he, you know, sometimes did purple and white, and you know, he did an Italian car in green and red and white, and just every time he did that, it stood out to me, and I always liked it. And you know, of course, the speeds that the sprint cars are carrying around the track, it just holds interest very well.
Would you say that night was the beginning of your fascination with the world of auto racing, or was there other things being around the Lynch family that got you interested in auto racing?
Well, I would say it had to be before that, because, you know, we always joke around and said before I could walk, I was on something that was, you know, going in a circle. So, you know, I was riding a bike very early, and my dad got me in my first quad whenever I was 3 years old. And, you know, so everything happened very early. And, you know, just growing up in a racing family, you know, every weekend, you know, it's race weekend. And you either love it or you hate it. And, you know, some people, they just stand off it, and they don't really like cars going in a circle. But I was never like that. I waited for the weekends. I was so happy to go out and be a part of it and to watch him. And, you know, he was just dominating Western Pennsylvania at the time and all the records he was breaking. And it was just something great to see. But at the house and at the garage, we had a little dirt track in the backyard. And, you know, man, I would spend hours and hours and hours out there just in a go-kart or in a quad or on a dirt bike or something, that anything that had wheels that could go, I was trying to get on it.
Now, of course, you just recently competed in your first 410 sprint car feature a few weeks ago there at Lernerville at the Still City Stampede. But you've been racing the 305 sprint cars this past year up at Mercer Raceway Park. Outside of what you were doing in your dad's garage area, any other previous racing before the 2014 season for yourself?
No, there has not been any competitive racing in my history compared to 2014. Like I said, I've always been on quads, dirt bikes, and go-karts, but just with my dad's working schedule and him racing, there was just never time for me to get into competitive go-karts or something like that at a young age. And, you know, he really did cut back his racing schedule in 2013 and 2014, which really gave me the opportunity to go out with other teams and try to compete in the 305 class.
Obviously, you've watched a lot of racing and you've been around the cars, but do you feel that even without having the opportunity to have come up through the ranks of the go-karts and the micro sprints, that being able to handle a beast such as a 410 will more than likely come natural to you?
I would agree with that. You know, the way that I see it is, even if you had the ability to, you know, be competitive in a go-kart and go out and race, you know, from the age of four on, that's all well and good, but, you know, all that teaches you is to really go in a circle and to pass cars. And, you know, like I said, just with the ability that we had as the Lynch Racing family, just with the quads, the dirt bikes, the go-karts, you know, we had the option of going in a circle. We just weren't competitive with it. So I would definitely say having the option to go into the 410 just a random weekend out of the year was definitely mind-rattling for me, since I've only had one season, you know, being on the track with other cars. But it's something that definitely came natural, you know, just from watching my dad and just from dreaming of being in that position.
And what was Dad's advice to you, not only when you jumped into the 305 for the first time, but also when you went out for your first 410 race there at Lernerville?
Well, whenever I was getting into 305 back in last February, my dad's advice was just take everything a step at a time, and, you know, the feel you're going to have with any sprint car is different than you've ever felt before. And so whenever I went out in the 305, we just really took baby steps, and I was able to get some practice sessions in at Mercer Raceway Park, and was able to climb the ladder a little bit there. But whenever it came to the 410, it was a totally different ball game. You know, we had one test session on Thursday, but even with that, I mean, you're still going against 30 really good cars in those test sessions. So his advice was be smart, be smooth, and just let, you know, you drive the car, but you don't overdrive the car.
And could you tell a difference in terms of the horsepower, a difference between the 305 and the 410? Having raced at Mercer and then at Lernerville?
Absolutely, absolutely. And prior to me climbing in the 410, I asked a whole lot of people, you know, even people that have just gone from 360 to 410, I've asked them, you know, how big of the difference is it? You know what I mean? And they would always tell me, oh, it's not that big of a difference. You know, it's all well and good. Well, I definitely think that they just told me that to make me feel good, which I can definitely respect that. But definitely going from a tight bull ring like Mercer Raceway Park and then going to Lernerville and from one in the 305 and then jumping to a 410, the speed and the downforce and just the way the car reacts was a complete different ballgame. You just have to be able to adapt with it and race with the car, not against the car.
And obviously going down the backstretch at Lernerville, you don't want to get too close to the edge and go over, because that would not be a pleasant experience, as there is no guardrail. For those of you who have never been to Lernerville, there's no guardrail down the backstretch. So what was that like? Did you have an opportunity when you first rolled out in practice just to soak it in that you were actually on the track that your father dominated for so many years? Did you have one of those moments where you could just enjoy it for that split second, or was it all business?
Whenever I was going into Thursday, I really thought it was just going to be all business. My dad is very serious whenever it comes to racing, and I thought for sure it was just going to be all business and just stay focused. But prior to to me being pushed off out onto the track. My dad was going from the track and then coming back to me, you know, telling me how the track was reacting with all the other cars on it and telling me what's the best line and stuff like that. And at that moment, I realized to myself that it was like my dad and I switched positions, because for 17 years, that was me. I was doing what my dad did. And I was going out on the track and telling him, you know, okay, well, looks like you can roll the top in 1 and 2, but in 3 and 4, you just really got to get that chute off of 4. And he was always in the car, just calm and, you know, collecting it all in and trying to be focused. And right there at that moment, I had that aha moment. And, you know, that it didn't bring a tear to my eye, but, man, that really that choked me up for a second. But as soon as you push off in the sprint car, you know, the focus came back in. But prior to going green, we had this other moment, and my dad was standing right there off of turn 4 at Lernerville in the stands, and he was standing there right where I always gave him sign for 17 years. And at that moment, it sunk in again that, you know, for 17 years I've watched him race and just dominate and win championships and outlaw races there. And, you know, for me to have the opportunity to go out and now it's my chance to be on the track was definitely a moment to take in.
How did you develop the skills to be able to read the track and give that kind of feedback as you were? And as you and I talked off the air before we came on, we chatted one night when a number of years ago, and I noticed you were down there doing that.
It's actually funny because whenever I was really, really young, I would always sit in the stands and I would play with my little cars, and I would just, you know, have my own little racetrack in the stands. But as soon as my dad would hit the track, all the cars were pushed away, and it was just focusing, just being in awe and watching my dad. And even whenever I was 4 or 5 years old, I would ask my dad after the race, you know, why was the track getting silver in the middle of the racetrack, and why were all the cars sliding through the silver part? And, you know, that's something that not a lot of 4-year-olds would, you know, question, but I was just intrigued by it, and I couldn't believe it. And so at that young of an age, realizing that, it just all built up, and my dad was very good at explaining and taking the time to, you know, tell me what was going on with the track, you know, the cushion and the slickness and, you know, where it would get rubbered down and, you know, at what time it would get rubbered down and when the traction would come back. So just him taking the time to do that, you know, I can't thank him enough for it, because that's the reason, you know, I know what I know today.
We're talking with third-generation driver Cy Lynch from Apollo, Pennsylvania, a 17-year-old junior. I have to ask you, any sports that you played in high school? And also, second part of that question, how do you explain to your friends that going around in circles is pretty darn cool?
Well, in high school, I played baseball for 11 years prior to high school. And while I've been in high school, I've done the golf team, and I've been a part of that for 3 years on the varsity team. And my freshman and sophomore year, I did football. And I actually quit baseball to go to my dad's races, because baseball's in the summer, and I was missing a lot of games, and I was on traveling teams, and I didn't like it. And yeah, I was having fun, but just having that thought in my head that, you know, I was missing races and missing my dad was not making me feel good. So I quit that and focused on racing. But whenever it comes to explaining to all my friends in school what I do, it's tricky, that's for sure, because half the kids don't even know what a race car is, and if they do, anytime I tell them what a sprint car is, they think, oh, so you do NASCAR. No, not at all. But actually, it was very cool, because this past weekend, whenever I did the 410 show at Lernerville, I had probably 50 kids from my school come and surprise me to watch me, and that was something that was just really cool, and I can't thank them enough for that. Because they've never been to a race, so they didn't know what they were getting themselves into. But, you know, they just came for support, and that was great. And at the end of the night, they go, wow, that's so cool. You're going so fast, and it's on dirt, and you're sliding, and there's cars flipping, and, you know, they loved it.
Well, that's neat. That's good to hear that there's a bunch of kids that appreciate what you do, and it's it is the age-old question. How do you explain to somebody that doesn't understand our sport that you have to go left to go right? I mean, that'll really throw them off.
Oh, yeah, they were definitely confused by that. They're like, oh, whenever you said you went in a circle, I didn't know you drifted right. I'm like, well, it's hard to explain, that's for sure.
Where do you see yourself going? I mean, obviously, your grandmother, a great lady, and Jeannie Lynch, longtime personnel in the world of motorsports. Everybody knows and loves your grandmother. And obviously, I'm sure you guys have talked a lot of shop over the years. Where do you see yourself going in racing in the future?
Well, in the short-term future, I would love to stick with sprint cars. That's what I grew up watching. That's where my heart is. I definitely love 410 sprint cars and 305 sprint cars, but getting the chance to drive a 410, I would really like to stay there. I tried to prove over the weekend that I could handle it, and that was really my main focus over the weekend, was just to prove everyone that I'm ready to take the next step. I would definitely like to stay in the 410s, just climb that ladder as much as I can, as quick as I can. But in the long term, I think that's undecided. Obviously, the dream for any race car driver is to eventually, make it big time and either be with the Outlaws or, something like that, to be Steve Kinser or Donnie Schatz or Joey Saldana, that's for sure.
And as you look ahead, when might you know if there is going to be something available for a 410, or is the 305 option still on the table for next year? With the team that you were with this year as well?
There's been a lot of talk between the team that I was with this past year at the end of the season and just getting ready for next year. Nothing has been set in stone yet, but they did throw out the option of putting me in the 410 for all of next season. And like I said, nothing is set in stone yet, but that's what's on the table. As far as 305 goes, I would definitely, accept a ride if it came to me. Just like I said, sprint cars are where I want to be. But I would definitely like to stick with 410s and just see if I can climb that ladder and learn and try to adapt to those. And, just take a step back and look at where all the other young sprint car drivers are is really amazing right now. You have Christopher Bell, who's doing very well in midgets and USAC and sprint cars, and you have Danny Holkerver, who's local to here, who's doing very well for himself, landing that Phoenix Racing ride. So I think it's just a matter of time, and time will tell, but the 410s are definitely where I'd like to be.
Well, Cy, it was a pleasure having you on the show here, and we want to wish you all luck as the decisions come about, whether you get into the 410s or with the 305s for the 2015 season. And we look forward to hearing more about you as time rolls on, as you continue on the Lynch name out there in Western Pennsylvania.
Okay, thank you very much, and thanks for having me.
Sure thing. Third generation driver Cy Lynch joining us here on the Sprint Car Show. We will take a break and be back with more of our show right after this. Now that fall has arrived, it's time to start working on that Christmas list for the race fan in your life. Whether you are looking for a book or a DVD, you can do all of your shopping securely online at Coastal181.com. Whether it's dirt or asphalt, short track or super speedway, open wheel or stock car, you'll find something for every race fan at Coastal181.com. Coastal181.com. Reading for racers.
This has been a presentation of the Dirt Track Channel.